Hello, welcome to The Profit Margin with Jamie DeLargy and Naomi McMullen. This week we're getting under the bonnet, looking at company cars. What's the best option for your business? These days, vehicles are seen more and more as part of the whole benefits package. So what are the personal tax implications? Plus, what really is popular in the affordable premium sector? And what's the best way to purchase? As we've been finding out, there are plenty of ways to do it. Jamie went down to Charleshurst and spoke to Jeff McCartney to find out about current buying trends.
Jeff, we've been through a very severe downturn, and one wonders whether buyers are interested in the luxury marques when they're acquiring a car. What is the trend that you're seeing?
Well, there's no doubt. The senior managers still want to buy the luxury brands, but the luxury brands have obviously had to change their offering to suit those managers. And today, you can buy vehicles such as Maserati, which now offers a diesel engine that will appeal to this particular market.
I would have thought that Maserati would want to, you know, pitch their offering perhaps to people who are really incredibly rich and wouldn't want to, if you like, come down market. What's going on in their heads?
They've seen this as a massive opportunity to appeal to a much larger audience. And being able to launch a vehicle that's under £50,000 really opens up the market for the luxury brand.
Let's look at perhaps the average buyer. Now, when they're coming into the showroom, what's in their head? What are the criteria they're coming to you with? Is it to do with fuel efficiency? Is it to do with comfort? Is it to do with spec? Or is it indeed to do with image?
Probably all of the above. I mean, they want to get the best car that they can for the money that they've been allowed to spend. So, yes, image is one. They want to make sure that the vehicle has the specification that they need, not only in their business life, but for their personal lives, for their personal use. And things like price, CO2 emissions would also be important.
Would you ever see someone saying, I prefer this car because of the badge, even though you could show them another car which perhaps doesn't have the same cachet, but in fact offers better value for money?
Absolutely. I mean, people sometimes aspire to own the best badge that they can get. For whatever reason, that's because they've aspired to own that particular make of car. Others will be happy to come further down the food chain and buy a vehicle that maybe just doesn't have the same badge, but certainly has a lot of specification for the money.
Okay, let's talk about CO2 emissions. You mentioned them there, and that, as I understand, is becoming increasingly an important factor in the buying process.
So there are two real things that matter when someone's buying, and that is the price of the car and the CO2 emissions, because those are the two things that will affect their personal taxation on the vehicle.
Another thing, I suppose, that could be a factor, when someone comes into the showroom, do they have a figure in their mind that's what they want to spend, whether it be 30,000, 40,000 or 50,000, and they simply won't go above it? What's in their heads?
Some do. But if they're buying it, it's really on, and most of them buy on a monthly payment, and they'll fund all sorts of ways that they can fund the vehicle, but they'll be given the budget they're allowed to spend, and they'll come out and try to get the best possible vehicle they can for that monthly payment.
Is there a typical outlay that they're focused on?
It depends where they are in their company and what their company let them spend, but it can be anything from 200 to 300 to 400 or above, depending where they are in that particular company.
Has anyone ever really surprised you with their demands when they've come in to look for a new car?
Absolutely. They want everything they can get for the budget that they want, the budget they have been set. It's not always possible, but we tend to find that the cars come with fantastic specification, no matter what you're looking for in the market today, so there's usually something to fit everyone.
Who knew Maserati had entered the corporate car market? Things have changed. They obviously view it as a lucrative section. Well, you heard Jeff mention the CO2 emissions. They really can make a difference to your personal tax bill. Jamie went to speak to accountant David Waugh from Hamilton Morris Waugh.
David, we've heard already that CO2 emissions should play a part, in fact do play a part, in the buying decision. Now, naively, one might think that's to do with road tax, but I understand it's more complicated than that.
Yes, it is certainly more complicated than that. Road tax is a very minor part of the equation. The biggest part is the CO2 emissions and the impact it has on your personal tax and on the company tax.
Give me an idea of how that might cost you if you make the wrong call here.
Yeah, the government has been determined to reduce CO2 emissions, and they've used the tax charge as a carrot or a stick to get that. A typical example on a mid-range car, the personal tax could be £1,000 on a low emission car, electric car, low emission, or on a very high emission car, it could be up to five times that amount, so it could be £5,000 a year.
Jimmy, a lot of numbers there. Could you summarise that for me?
Yeah, it really is complicated and I'm no accountant. But I suppose the best way I think of looking at it is I suppose some people quite naively might assume that the key difference is with regard to the road tax. And I suppose there are hundreds of pounds of difference if you buy an electric car, which is zero CO2 emissions, and you buy some form of gas guzzler. But that's not the biggest hit. The really serious damage to your pocket is on the issue of personal tax. I mean, a company car is a benefit, and of course it's taxed. And the more CO2 emissions it produces, the more heavily it's taxed. And here we're talking about thousands of pounds of extra tax that you will pay every year. So it is a key decision you have to make. So now you've decided to buy that company car, I suppose most people don't buy it outright. So which is better, hire purchase or contract hire? Which is the best choice? I put that to David.
We would normally recommend a contract hire. The advantage is that it's a fixed monthly charge. The business understands what it is, what it's going to pay each month, and can budget accordingly. The hire purchase, while it is a monthly charge, you're having to finance the full cost of the vehicle and take the risk of the value of the vehicle depreciating further. The ownership passes to the company, and the full finance is charged to the company.
One final point, I should also say that to buy the car of your choice, you don't always have to go directly to the dealer.
It's not always the best option. Obviously, there are times whenever dealers have very good deals, and that's grand. We would always recommend that people go to non-tied contract hire companies who can research the marketplace for you, find you the best vehicle and also the best finance for that vehicle.
And what about garage costs then? Are you covered in the same way that you would be if you bought it directly from the dealer?
Yes, the ultimate deal will still be done through a particular dealer, and they will take responsibility for servicing and the maintenance of that.
Well, there you go, David Waugh, rounding off that interview there. I'm sure you learned a lot during that process, Jimmy.
I did. I'm now going to embark on that key decision whether to buy a very big gas-guzzling car or a much cheaper version.
Let us know how you get on. We'll stay there because we're going to talk about how partnering with a university can help your business.
You're listening to The Profit Margin with First Trust Bank.
I suppose most people will be aware that university students very often do one-year placements with companies, and in this case, typically a salary is paid. But they also frequently do final year projects with firms, which involve no expense to the company. The student gets hands-on experience, and the company gets the benefit of the student's expertise, completely free. A number of different departments will offer this arrangement, but we spoke to Dr. Mervyn Smith from the School of the Built Environment of Ulster University. I began by asking how it worked.
Say, for example, a company had an idea or had a concept or had a product that was at early prototype stage. If they came to the university at a suitable time, of course, before the start of the academic year, and asked a particular supervisor in that area, is this a subject that you could maybe look at? Then we could take that subject matter and put it out to the students as a one-year project. The student then would carry out the research, the analysis, the experimental validation of that at no cost to the company. The company perhaps would have to provide the material, would maybe have to provide the product. But in essence, the student, bear in mind that the student is learning as they go along, so it wouldn't be something that would be immediate. You're looking at the student having to do a little bit of background reading around the subject. But broadly speaking, you're talking about something that would allow the company to get some form of proof of concept or proof of principle of that piece of kit or idea or concept.
Give me an idea of how many hours the company might reasonably expect the student to put in to investigate the subject at hand.
The module itself dictates the student to put in maybe 200 hours over the semester. A lot of that will be reading, a lot of that will be self-study time. But it depends on the actual project, but you could be looking at, you know, 2 days a week for potentially 12 weeks. And that's a very, very loose idea. It really depends on the, you know, the subject matter and what needs to be decided upon.
What is the general response from the companies at the end of this process? How appreciative are they of the help they've been given?
Obviously, they have to be realistic in what they're going to get out of it. It is a student project. Students, by definition, are not experts in the area. They get the added benefit of the supervising from a from somebody within the university. So there is an element of sort of cross-checking and making sure the work is of a certain calibre or standard. But it really sometimes comes down to the selection of the student. I would say that all of the companies that we have worked with in that context have been happy with the outcome. They've certainly got results that, in one or two of the cases, they've actually put it onto their website.
If the student were to make some form of breakthrough, in other words, come up with something that the company hadn't devised themselves, mm-hmm. who owns that intellectual property?
Similarly, a student, when they sign up to the actual university course as part of their dissertation, if they're carrying that out on behalf of a company, then that, if the student is directly responsible for the breakthrough, then the IP wouldn't have happened if the student wasn't involved, if you know what I mean. So the university would still own it. Therefore, a company may want to enter into some sort of, you know, agreement to formalise any of the work to be done, that any IP will be still owned and or shared with the university.
So it could be something for you to look into if you're interested. And if you're interested in getting in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook at The Profit Margin and on Twitter at The Profit Margin. Now, with a look at what's coming up in the week ahead, here's Neil Parker from First Trust Bank.
Coming up, all eyes in Europe will be on the German IFO Business Sentiment Survey. The reality of the consequences of the UK leaving the EU have heightened uncertainty about the euro area, and there are fears that this could put a dampener on Europe's largest economy. Stateside, as expected, the US Federal Reserve kept interest rates on hold, and with the GDP figures due for release, we'll be looking for confirmation that the US economy is still recovering, despite the slowdown in China and the rock-bottom oil prices. And from the UK, we'll have GDP for quarter two. Let's remember, this is a pre-Brexit referendum number, so won't give us any idea of the vote impact. But I would expect growth for 2016 to remain solid until we start the divorce negotiations from the EU.
Plenty to think about there. Well, our regular listeners will know that it's that time of the show where we showcase a startup. Stepping into the elevator to pitch their business this week is Steve Ferris. Talnet is a social networking website for people and businesses specialising in the creative industries. Here's Steve explaining how it works.
Hi there, my name is Steve Ferris and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Talnet. Talnet is a social networking website for people and businesses specialising in the creative industries. These include areas such as film and TV, music, theatre, arts, fashion and textiles, animation, modelling, photography, radio, visual effects and publishing. Our mission is to unite the creative communities and provide those within the necessary tools and solutions to showcase their talent. Maybe you're just starting out on your creative journey, or maybe you have vast experience in the industry. We are the network, you're the talent. Talnet is where creative communities connect, and if you're still trying to envisage what Talnet is, think LinkedIn meets IMDb, and it looks pretty slick too. It's up to you to get proactive, so why not use Talnet to build your portfolio and enhance your career in the creative industry? You can showcase your showreel, project pages and more on a global platform. Talnet launches this autumn, but you can already register your interest at www.talnet.com. That's T-A-L-N-E-T. It's as simple as filling in your name and email address.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. If there's a topic that you'd like discussed or think that we should be talking about, do get in touch. As I've mentioned, you can find us on Twitter at The Profit Margin or on Facebook at The Profit Margin.
You're listening to The Profit Margin with First Trust Bank.